the one for hip hop and R&B. This is the beat of CT. I'm your host, Jenny Boom Boom, and DJ Meechie's here too. What up, Meech?
What's going on, Jenny?
And today we have Sue Willette from Roadway of Hope with us. And welcome, Sue.
Thank you.
So, Sue, tell me all about Roadway of Hope because I'm hearing wonderful things about it.
Roadway of Hope is a nonprofit organization that helps support families and people that suffer from substance use disorder through Narcan training, giving out Narcan. We do a parent support group meeting once a week to help the parents. What else do we do? We've done a bunch of different things. We raise money to help support sober living for people that are just getting out of rehab and all sorts of stuff like that.
So what made you decide you wanted to start Roadway of Hope?
5 years ago, on August 10th of 2015, my middle son was arrested and my house was raided and my son went to prison. And then 2 weeks later, my youngest son overdosed in Hartford and thankfully survived. So I just, after I got over the initial shock of what was going on, I just felt I needed to do something. I was very alone and I didn't want other families to be alone. And that's kind of how the Roadway was born.
So when you found out about your son who was arrested and then your other son who overdosed but thankfully survived, did you know leading up to any of this happening that there was an issue going on with them?
With my older son, yes. We had been going through for about 10 years with him from the time he was about 12 with some mental health issues and substance use disorder. But at 18, he put himself in a program. I thought he was doing well. He was on some medically assisted treatment. Never in a million years did I know what was going on. I thought that the medically assisted treatment was kind of my insurance policy.
Right.
And that he was okay, but he wasn't. And I didn't know. I mean, when they came knocking on my door, I didn't have a clue what was going on.
Wow. So, I mean, I know the reason why I asked that is because so many families have no idea that somebody in their family is involved in drugs. So can you tell us some of the signs to look for?
With him, it was mostly mental health at first. I mean, there were moments he was just out of control, I guess. And people were telling me he was just an out of control teenager and it was normal behavior and, you know, never being home. He started self-mutilating at a very young age. I mean, I had him in and out of, you know, treatment with doctors and stuff like that from the time he was very young. And then I knew that he was experimenting with marijuana and I had a feeling alcohol. Then when he was 14, he had hernia surgery and was given a whole boatload of pain medication. And I didn't have a clue what it would, you know, what it may do to him. And that's when my ride through hell started with him, you know, in and out of treatment centers, attempted suicide, just totally out of control. And that went on for years. Like I said, at 18, he went into 17, excuse me. He went into a program. When I finally got somebody to listen to me that something was wrong, he was diagnosed as bipolar and things seemed really well. But then around 19 or 20, he decided he didn't like the bipolar medication and he stopped it. And I knew that something had started. He came to me and said, I have a problem, found himself his own doctor and was put on the medication and things were good for a while. And I just, and then I don't know what happened from there, but it just spiraled out of control.
So both of your sons, are they addicted to heroin?
Yes, they were.
Yeah, because I know that that's a big problem here in America because, like you said, of all these prescriptions from painkillers. And I also myself have a family member that is addicted to heroin. He's supposedly sober now. We want to believe that. But, you know, the whole process of getting sober was a lot. And and what are some of the things that people can look for physically when someone's using drugs?
I noticed with my youngest son, it started in college. So he wasn't home when it started. So I didn't see the beginning signs of that. And when I finally realized what was going on, it blew me away because he was my anti-drug, anti-everything kid, you know, star baseball player on the dean's list, top of his class in nursing school. And then he came home for Christmas break. He was dirty and unkempt, and he had lost a lot of weight, and, you know, the dark circles under the eyes, the long sleeves, you know, all the time. And still, it just kind of, I don't know, maybe I didn't want to see it because, and he went back to school and things just spiraled out of control. He came home for spring break, and I literally thought it was the stress of school. That was what I was thinking in my head. He was a nursing student, third year. And I chose to pull him from school because I thought he was suicidal, never dreaming that what was going on was going on. I still just didn't see it. And then that summer is when it really spiraled out of control. The long sleeve, very unkept. They don't shower. They don't eat. I mean, it's the nodding off, which I didn't realize what that was. And then, of course, there was all my teaspoons missing and 500 Q-tips a week disappearing out of my bathroom and the little elastic bands, which I thought in my head were from one of the girlfriend's braces, not realizing that there were things that hold the baggies together. And, you know, all these things that I know now that were like, boy, am I stupid.
Well, you weren't stupid. You just were hoping for the best when it came to your child.
Yeah. And I didn't even, to tell you the honest truth, until 5 years ago, I didn't even know what heroin was.
Right.
I didn't have a clue.
A couple of other things that I've noticed too, Sue, so just going from, you know, personal experience, people that use heroin tend to have very bad skin.
Yeah.
They have, you know, a lot of acne a lot of times.
Kids didn't really have that, which surprised me. You know, a lot of them will pick at their faces and stuff. Mm. And I never noticed that with my kids. They were just, my youngest one, very just unkempt, you know, same clothes for days on end and never showering. And
also, you know, I noticed drug addicts tend to use their jaw a lot, Michi. They move their jaw back and forth a lot. Yeah. Which, by the way, is a lasting effect. When you get involved in drugs like heroin, even after you recover and you're sober, you still do have some of these physical characteristics.
Yeah, my son has a twitch that he does, and it's kind of like a shoulder thing that I notice happens all the time. And I don't know if that's from, he's on some medication also, so I don't know if it's a side effect of the medication or if it's just a lasting effect of what he was doing. Mm.
So what medication is he on? Suboxone?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just tell us some of these services that you offer here at Roadway of Hope. You know, I know that you said a few things that you guys do, but tell me what a typical, what, you know, if I want to get involved with Roadway of Hope, where are you going to lead me?
Like I said, a lot of what we do is support. I mean, I've been on the phone with families, members at all hours of the day and night, you know, trying to help. We don't outsource anybody, but we give the tools and the resources to them to get them, you know, or their loved one into care. So a lot of just, you know, helping people with meltdowns and, you know, guiding them onto where their resources are, which Connecticut is getting better about if you can get in there. We've done a month's worth of sober living for somebody coming out. We've bought plane tickets to get people out of state to rehab. We've thrown Christmas parties for sober living houses where so far we've only done two girls' houses where we've provided Christmas. We've provided dinner and presents. And if they have kids, we've given gifts to their kids. We've done Narcan training sessions. What else have we done? What?
Sorry.
Several times. Sorry, my husband's in the background.
Oh, that's good. You got a little support system there. Is your husband also involved in Roadway of Hope?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you want to come get on the interview? He wants to come get in the interview.
He's like, I'm kinda. So those are the things we do. We run a parent support group. We've partnered with Community Renewal Team out of Hartford. They received a grant that has for a parent support group. So we've been doing that since December.
We just had Jason Black from CRT on last Sunday with
us. Have you?
Yeah.
They are amazing people, and it's been great. It's called, our support group is called Breaking Bread. And up until COVID, we were meeting once a week. We were providing dinner. So it was dinner and a conversation. So family members could come and we would just, sorry, my dog. We would do, you know, a support group over dinner, which when you're eating, you tend to be more relaxed and people tend to talk more.
I don't want to interrupt you, but do you have a basset hound?
No.
Okay. Because my father used to have a basset hound that barked like that. His name was Louie. So I thought maybe it was a basset hound, but sorry. No, go
ahead. Bentley is black lab and border collie.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. Sorry. So but go ahead. Go back to breaking bread.
It's dinner and a conversation. So we have our meeting over dinner. We talk about harm reduction. We provide Narcan to any of the family members that need it. Like I said, it's through a grant through that CRT had gotten, and they had offered us to be able to do it. It's been a wonderful program. Can't wait to get back into the person-to-person. We've been doing the Zoom thing, but it's not the same.
Right. Right. Now, I was going to ask you that. So, like, has it been challenging with, you know, with everything going on, like the COVID stuff, like with trying to, I guess, like connect with the people and help with
it people? It is. Other than phone, and my phone number is on everything, so people can contact me that. But it is. Not a lot of people like the Zoom meetings. Not a lot of people trust the Zoom meetings.
Right.
Hmm. You know, you don't know if somebody else is there that you've never met. It's not the same as face-to-face.
Right.
So it's, I can't wait. We're hoping next week to start doing one out, doing our meeting outside, so we could still social distance and, you know, meet in a park somewhere and be able to still do our one-on-one until the churches allow us back in.
Right. So how do families get involved with you?
Just by contacting me. A lot of them want to volunteer. We've had some that have contacted that have become board members. I get a lot of volunteers when we do our big rally at the end of the summer. I get a lot of parents that volunteer, a lot of people in recovery that come in, because we usually do a recovery rally in August, usually around International Overdose Awareness Day, and it's for people in recovery. It's usually live music and resources and games and food and all that. So that's when I usually ask for a bunch of volunteers.
That sounds like fun.
It is. It's fun. And unfortunately, it's kind of sad that we may not be doing it this year because of this whole COVID thing.
Well, hopefully everybody will be. Because families need that type of support.
They do. And I think people in recovery need to know that you can have fun in recovery without the drugs and alcohol.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that's why we do the bowling event. It's a great event for people in recovery to come, and they know it's a safe place where you can get together with other people in recovery and just have fun.
So are your sons involved with Roadway of Hope at all?
My youngest one is more than my middle one. My middle one works way too many hours. So it's
but
hard for him.
But
he's
involved.
Spent 2.5 years in prison. So he's kind of, he knows it's there and he'll talk about it, but he's trying to move forward from it. I mean, he knows what I do and he loves what I do, but he's kind of wants to not talk about the things that have happened prior to. And I get that.
Right.
We're 5 years sober on August 10th this year.
Oh, that's quite an achievement.
Yeah. Yeah.
And speaking of prison, I know that you also like to reach out to prisoners. So tell me about that.
Yeah. I haven't done as much as I used to do because I am very busy with work and other things. But writing people, Jonathan, my son, had a kid that I got to know through visiting him. He would be visiting his mother. So I try to write him once in a while and just reach out because he's still there. And, you know, let him know they care. And just fighting for their rights. I mean, it's really sad what's going on, especially right now with them being released from, first of all, not getting any help in prison. There is no help. They don't.
And there is drug use in prison also.
Oh, yes, there is. They don't get any treatment. You know, they detox on the floor of a jail cell with nothing. They, you know, and they don't get anything. My son, if he was lucky, he got AA once a month. Mm. You know, and then they're released. And if I found out through the through one of our legislators, when the whole COVID thing happened, they were releasing prisoners early for to get them out of prison, but they're releasing them. And if they're not going on probation or parole, they don't aren't offered any services when they leave. They're released to the streets with nothing. And two people, I belong to quite a few support groups on Facebook through Connecticut, and two people that I consider friends because I've known them for the last 5 years through all this thing on support groups. One was a boy and one was a girl. They were released from prison on the same day, and 4 days later, they were dead of overdoses.
It's awful.
Because they have no resources. And they're not required to give resources to somebody that's released, considered time served.
Wow. That is awful.
Wrong. They don't even release them with Narcan. They don't release them with any type of medication. Nothing. Here you go. See you later. Figure it out.
That's awful. So I also saw that you sent some notes about people being thrown out of sober living homes.
Yes, they are not considered rental properties. So during COVID, if they lose their jobs and they can't pay, they're being thrown out.
Wow. So tell me the process of, first of all, entering a sober living home.
Usually you have to find, you're interviewed and there's a contract that you sign. The contract is more like a rooming house type contract, which is not under that rental, you know, landlord-tenant thing. There's no lease. So you usually that they give you the state, some of them accept state money, and it's usually for like 30 days or 90 days. Once that's gone, that gives you, supposed to give you enough time to get a job so that you can pay your weekly rent. And if you don't have that job and you can't pay that weekly rent, you're thrown out. See ya.
Wow. I didn't even realize that people were offered sober living homes. Is this like a group home where
they are? They're sober living houses are houses that are sober. Where everybody that lives in them are sober. They're usually run by either somebody in recovery or somebody that's a family member that's open because of what's going on in their lives. Mm. And yes, they're required to work. There's chores. They do drug tests. Most of them do random drug testing. Some of them require you to go to meetings, X amount of meetings. A lot of them have house meetings. And they're supposed to be a safe environment for people to live in. And there are some very good ones in the state of Connecticut, and there are some very bad ones in the state of Connecticut.
Wow.
You know, but like I said, they're like rooming houses. They're like weekly pay. So if you don't pay, you don't live there. And, you know, here's people in early recovery. Some of them have been weeks. Some of them have been only a few months, and now they're put on the streets because they can't afford to pay, especially now because most of them came out of prison or out of rehab. They haven't had a job because of their addiction. So they're working at the McDonald's, the Subways, the Dunkin' Donuts, or as in the restaurants as servers that have all shut down because of all this stuff.
Right. That's a really tough spot for them to be in.
Yeah. And a lot of the families just can't do it anymore. So they're on their own.
Jeez. Wow. I mean, I know that this is a huge problem in the United States. I know that there's a lot of painkillers being given out by doctors. A lot of people are getting hooked on painkillers, and when they can't afford the painkillers or the prescription discontinues, that's when people search for heroin in the street.
Yeah, because pills on the street are about $50 a piece.
Right. So they shoot up heroin because it's cheaper. But where do you think the disconnect is happening here? Like, why do you see that there's going to be some sort of something where the numbers are going to go down and folks are going to actually get it? Or is this disconnect just going to continue to happen where people are just going to try the heroin and just use
until
it?
Until our federal government admits that this is a serious problem and stops taking money from big pharmaceutical companies that are paying them off to continue to push these pills, it's never going to change. I mean, this pandemic is going on. This opioid pandemic has been going on a lot longer, and you don't see that splashed all over the news every single day, day in and day out, 24 hours a day. Yet we have people dying every 8 seconds in this
country. Wow. A person dies every 8 seconds from heroin?
In this country from an overdose.
Wow.
Wow.
Yet you don't see that publicized because they're, look at the lobbyists and the people in our government. They're lining the pockets of our government and making big, big money. So until that stops, this is never going to change.
Wow. So what is some advice that you can give to parents, you know, and family members just for the signs? I know we talked about some of the physical signs and some of the behavior, but what to look for if you think that somebody in your family is possibly using?
Isolation. That's the first one. They'll isolate in their rooms. Notice what's missing in your house. Like I said, teaspoons, Q-tips, cotton balls. Their behavior, their behavior, the nodding out, the slurring of words, they can get very violent when they need it and can't get it, missing of money. It's, you know, there's so many different signs, and especially young, they out all night, watch what they look like when they come home, check for the clothing, and you know, if they're wearing long sleeves and it's 110 degrees outside, you have a problem.
Mm.
Right. You know, a very serious problem.
All right. And then if we think something is going on, and do we step in or do we call folks like yourself over at Roadway of Hope and try to get some help?
I think the first thing is to talk to your child, especially when they're young. First of all, I think we should be educating our kids from the time they enter kindergarten.
Mm.
You know, I don't care what people think or say or do, but we need to teach our kids about drugs. You know, 85% of the kids entering kindergarten are dealing with it at home in one way or another.
Okay.
You know, so it's not like they're not living it, but I think they need to know that they can talk about it. And I think we need to start at a very young age teaching our kids about life and that things aren't always fair and how to deal with those things. I keep saying we need to talk to them, you know, other than nutrition and all that stuff, but about self-image and, you know, that it's okay that you don't win every time and that you're not perfect and you don't get straight A's. And I think we just need to teach our children how to deal with life.
Okay.
You know, right now we live in a society where it's instant gratification. And when they play sports, everybody wins. That's not life. It doesn't work right. That way.
Right.
You know, so that it isn't a big disappointment, and to let them know that if things aren't okay at home, that it's okay to talk about it.
You know, I agree.
That they shouldn't be ashamed. Yeah.
I agree. Because we talk openly in this family about the things that have happened in the past with a person that has used drugs and was addicted to heroin. And we talk very openly about it with all the family members. Because you can't bury stuff under the rug and think that things are going to get better.
No, you can't. And like my grandson was 10 when everything happened. And we've had those open conversations from the day that happened, you know, on why his uncle was in prison and what happened. And yeah, that it's okay to be hurt and let people know how you feel. Because I think that's what it is. We teach our children to stuff their feelings.
Right.
Yeah.
Or we do, you know, and not any fault of a lot of parents, but two parent families that are working all the time, a lot of times just don't have time.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's not okay, but that's society.
Right. Yeah.
You know, here's the video game and, you know, keep quiet because I had a long, hard day at work. And, you know, family dinners don't happen as much anymore. And those kind of things just don't happen where you actually can sit down and talk to your child.
I will say that the pandemic, as bad as this whole thing has been, has brought back a lot of family, though.
Yes, it has.
You know, I know that I spend more time with my kids. My older kids especially are spending more time with us and with the smaller kids. We're working as one family unit, all trying to achieve the same goal. And we do have family dinners now, where before I would have been shipping my kids to 10 different activities during the week and, you know, running all over the place. Things have changed a lot. And I know, Michi, for you too, things have really, I know you don't have kids, but things have slowed down. You spent more time with your mom.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You do. And it's a nice thing that that's happening. And I think this is the perfect time for families to have those conversations.
Right. I agree.
You know, and I think waiting till high school is way too late. I think those conversations need to start when they're really young. I mean, our kids are growing up really fast. A 10-year-old now is what most kids were like when I went into high school, when I went to high school.
You know,
10 is the new 14.
Because of social media and everything else that's going on. Everybody's got a phone. So, I agree. So
I just think they grow up so much more because most families are two-parent working families. So kids are growing up a lot faster.
So what is the word that we can, because like Michi's in the clubs, well, when they open back up, he'll be back in the clubs with younger people. And, you know, we have a lot of younger listeners. So what are some messages that we need to get across as far as heroin or any drug addiction?
Say no. I mean, I know that's hard. I know peer pressure and everything, but don't start. What the drugs are nowadays are nothing like they were 20, 30 years ago. I mean, even marijuana is not the same thing as what it was, you know, when we were growing up. I don't know how old you guys are, at least when I was growing up.
Right.
You know, it's more potent with fentanyl coming into the picture now. That's being laced into so many different things. You don't even start because it'll destroy not only yourselves, but your families.
Right. Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you talking to us. Yeah, I love this conversation because you're just so open and honest. Like you said, a lot of families are very undercover when it comes to this stuff. But I always tell my kids, the families that look perfect, they're normally the crazy family. You know, I mean, that's how I really feel. Like, you know, it's best to be honest with each other and talk openly about things that have happened in the past because no family is perfect. And if you can learn from the things that have happened, that's a great thing.
And no family is immune to this.
Right. Oh, no. Yeah. You're exactly right about that. No, exactly right about that.
And if you think you're alone, there's probably one of your neighbors is probably dealing with the same thing right now.
Well, that's so great, Sue, the things that you're doing there over at Roadway of Hope. Now, do you have a website that we can get in touch with you or a Facebook page?
Yes, it's the Roadway of Hope CT. We have a Facebook page too. Okay. We're more, but our website's still in the making of being built. We've had a couple of different people doing it. So,
okay.
And, but the Roadway of Hope CT is our Facebook page too. And we're always on that. Somebody's always dealing, checking that out.
So we can definitely get in touch with you. And if we need some help, some guidance as to how to, you know, move forward with a certain situation that we're dealing with, you'll be there to help us.
Oh, yes. And my phone number is on everything. It's on our Facebook page. It's on our website. It's everywhere. People can.
Do you want to give it to us today too for anybody that's listening?
Yeah, it's 203-886- 5130.
203-886-5130.
Correct.
Okay.